Welcome to New Thinking for a New World, a Tilburg Foundation podcast. I am Alan Stoga, your host. Each week, I bring you conversations with people who think differently about the great issues that are shaping our world. Geopolitics, disruptive tech, mass migration, the changing climate, culture wars, all of it is grist for our mill. I hope you enjoy listening. I also hope you will let me know what you think and that you join the conversation at tilburgfoundation.org. And now for today's episode of New Thinking for a New World. The recent murderous attack on a concert in Moscow was history rhyming, if not quite repeating. Once again, terrorists, abetted by the Taliban in Afghanistan, were brutally assaulting innocent civilians. This time it was ISIS-K, next time perhaps a different name. Why is anyone surprised? About fundamentalist terrorists? About Afghanistan? My guest today knows Afghanistan. To her chagrin, she also knows the Taliban. Pashtana Dhirani is a formidable Afghan woman, deeply devoted to bringing her country into the 21st century, one empowered woman, one educated girl at a time. Given that background, it won't shock you to learn that she is decidedly unwelcome in an Afghanistan ruled by the Taliban. After listening to our conversation, I suspect it also won't shock you that Pashtana hasn't given up on those young girls who are her country's future, or for that matter, on Afghanistan. Welcome, Pashtana Dhirani, to New Thinking for a New World.
Thank you for having me, Alan.
Pashtana, you recently published an absolutely wonderful book about your journey so far, Last to Eat, Last to Learn. On the one hand, it's pessimistic, since, as you write, you've devoted your passion to two things the Taliban hate, empowering women and educating girls. You're lucky to be alive, in fact, given them and given those passions. On the other hand, here's how you end the book, quote, "I don't know how our story ends, not for Afghanistan, not for my girls, nor for my family, nor even for me." When I read that, I said to myself, really? How do you sustain that? That's fundamentally optimistic. How do you sustain it?
We know each other, so, and we have had these long conversations where I do sound cynical and pessimistic at times. Then at the same time, I'm a hopeless optimistic when it comes to Afghanistan, right? I believe that there is a way out of this, and I believe that there was a better Afghanistan back in the day. And there's going to be a better Afghanistan after this, you know? And I do hope that there's a place for me, for my family, for my girls, for our identities. Yeah, that's what I hope.
Let me push, because Afghanistan's problem is not, air quotes on problem, is not just the Taliban.
Yes.
It's also an incredibly traditional society, even before the Taliban, in which you had to fight because you are an independent thinker, and even worse from their point of view, independent actor. It's not a place where girls are supposed to be educated, women are supposed to be loud, women or have a view on most anything, I suspect. So put the Taliban aside for a minute. What is it about Afghanistan that makes you believe a different future is possible? And I'm going to ask you the same question about the Taliban.
That's a very good question. And I'm glad that you brought that up. I think the one thing that we, like, you know, that has not been highlighted in the West, especially, is the fact that the book clearly states that my grandma left the house in the middle of the night because my grandfather met her the second time and she took all her children with her. And this is not like the late 80s, we are talking about the 90s. I'm talking about the early 60s and the late 50s, right? And she made that decision and she was an educated woman, so she could do that, right? But then again, when you look at it in the 1920s, we had a woman minister of education who was also the queen of Afghanistan. But then again, so we have this whole line of women who were empowered in ancient Afghanistan in the 3,000-year-old history, but also like in the modern Afghanistan, which is like the 300-year-old history. The sad part is patriarchy is extremely embedded, and I don't want to deny that. So yes, there are good parts to it where we had women ministers and where we had people who were educators and everyone. But then at the same time, you look at the other end where you see all these opposing sides and they have been there. So I think for me, it's very important to look at the side where women were seen, have led, and made an example, even back in the day. I think if they can do it, anybody can do it. But then at the same time, It definitely is challenging. But then again, what society is not challenging to work with, you know? So that's why I think that makes me rethink the whole situation. Sure, there's opposition, but then where it's not, you know?
As you're talking, I'm trying to think of the timeline and your description of a past where Afghanistan allowed, which I unfortunately is the word, allowed women to be in important positions, predates the Russian invasion, predates that entire conflict, which was both a civil war and an invasion wrapped up together in one big mess. I'm not a historian of Afghanistan, but did that period shake things up so much that you went back to a much more distant past? It obviously empowered the Taliban. We'll get there in a second. But it's been a long time since women have had have important roles in your country.
I agree with you. And I think the one thing I was thinking about it yesterday, I was like, how did back in the day this system work? Like, how come there was this fine line between mullahs or men who were people of men of the cloth or religious leaders. And then there were people who were tribal leaders. Like, what was that fine line and how did that work? How did my grandfather make it work? How did his father make it work? Like, I kept on thinking to myself. And I think I came to this conclusion was when religious leaders were not religious leaders, they were just people who would be giving spiritual sermons or who would help you with your spiritual pathway rather than leading your whole life, you know, or giving you or thinking that they're entitled to do that. I think that's the most important part that we need to understand when it comes to Afghanistan. And I think in the past 40, 43 years now, the one thing that I understand is we gave power to so many petty people in so many wrong ways. And that ended up, you know, becoming something that we now it's a Frankenstein monster, so we cannot undo it. And it's become growing and evolving. And with each day, it's Mujahideen, Taliban, ISIS-K. And I don't even know tomorrow what it's going to be, you know. So it's one of those evolutionary monsters that has been created by using religion, extremism, and giving money and arms to people who, by the way, shouldn't be having access to those things. So it's those sort of things that make me think that, yes, it did shake up things, you know. 40 years, 43 years, access to those things, exposure to those things does sort of affect you. But then again, we still have people who still do stuff, you know, who are still in the 60s and 70s mindset. So I think it's sort of this imbalance that we have to counter right now. Yeah.
It's an important point because if I understood what you just said, when Afghanistan was predominantly a tribal society, women had more mobility. Your own story is part of that.
Yep.
Is a perfect example of that. As it became more dominated by fundamentalist religious people, I don't want to use the word leaders because I really like the word leaders and I do not want them to have any of that. But as it became more religious and the tribes got pushed aside, it got worse from the point of view of women, of educating girls, of your passions. Let's talk about those passions. Very specifically, you established, as the book discusses, something called LEARN. Tell us a little bit about LEARN, why you're doing what you're doing, and then we're going to separately talk about how you're doing it now since you're not in Afghanistan and can't be in Afghanistan. But what's the basic concept around LEARN?
The basic concept is, again, going back to my roots. So when I was a refugee, I grew up in a house where we had access to school. So my aunt used to run the school that my father had founded that was for refugee girls. And I had, growing up, this notion or this understanding that everybody has access to school. Like, it's just normal. People have schools in their houses and you just have random kids in your village come to your house and read, you know. I was like, oh, okay, that's normal. So you grow up, you're 16, 17, you go back to your country. And the first thing you see is, oh, you're in your own country. Millions and billions of money has been pumped into my country. And I'm not.
Excuse me. This is about when?
This is about 2017. This is about 2017. So growing up in 2001 and the early 2000s, that's where We had a school. We have these women who are coming, young girls, refugees. We literally had old women go around the village to talk to parents to bring their daughters to school. And this is not a funded school. This is just an effort from my family and community, right? So for me, I'm thinking, oh, we don't even have to debate on the right to education. We just have to find resources to educate people around us. I go back to my own country. The first thing I see is, oh, I have a whole tribe of my own people who are IDPs, internally displaced people, from Maruf, which is held hostage by the Taliban. Maruf is a district that I come from, or my family comes from. So this whole 400 families have moved to Spinbuldak, where they're IDPs, internally displaced people, and the district is booming with economy. It's a border district, so a lot of money is being there and used there. A lot of resources are being used. But the one thing that you notice that's not there is a school, a full-on school. And it's safe to do business, but it's not safe to have a school. And that sort of boggled with my head. And then again, like, you know, when I went to Kabul to question that, or I went to these places to question that were leading this development, I was told, oh, your people, you guys don't do that. Like, you don't do education. But the backstory for Learn is I started Learn out of spite because I was so mad at these people. I was with my own cousin. The first night I ended up in Afghanistan, I talked to my own cousin and she shows me how she's studying and she is learning. But do you know how she's learning? She's learning from on Thursdays and Fridays from her nephew who comes from the city, gives her some lessons and goes back. And I promised her, I was like, I'm going to get you into a school. That was it. For me, I was supposed to be a politician. My father wanted me to be a diplomat. But I mean, again, so then when I go to these authoritarian places with authority who have the money, who, by the way, on books, have a school in Spinbuldak, but in reality, there is no school. I start questioning things. And that's where Learn came into being. But then at the same time, when we work with my cousin, we get her into a school in the city. She gets into the school. Last but not the least, the school is not even competent enough to have kids from the tribal ruler regions, coming from war-torn spaces, you know. So it became natural that the first instance is to create a space that works for us, that works for our people, and that is not widening the gate, but it's actually filling it. So that's how Learn came into being, yeah.
The Telberg Foundation has a deep commitment to encouraging global values-based leadership wherever we can find it. With the Telberg Leaders Mentoring Leaders Program, we are looking to identify and nurture emerging leaders with outsized potential. TLML aims to leverage the Telberg Foundation's global network to accelerate emerging leaders' growth and impact. Are you someone, or do you know someone, who should be part of the TLML program? Applications will be accepted for March 15th. Go to telbergfoundation.org for more information. Let's fast forward to 2024. You're, thank goodness, not in Afghanistan. There's a long story there. Read the book to find out how you got out of Afghanistan. But Learn still exists. And you're still teaching kids, you're teaching both girls and boys, but girls have a more difficult time getting access. How does Learn function today?
Learn, I'm proud to say Learn is today the first and the most sustainable remote nonprofit that is led by people under 25. So we have around 40 member staff that are all under 25. I just became 26, so that's fun. I'm the only person leading that. But the fun fact is Learn is today active in more than 4 provinces. We have more than 400 girls. And the guess what? The girls are from grade 7 to grade 12. The actual ages or the classes that are banned by the Taliban right now. And we run these classes in person. And we are hoping that by the end of next year, we will be expanding to 34 provinces of Afghanistan. All provinces of Afghanistan, and we'll be hoping that it's all 3,400 leaders that we graduate within the next 4 to 5 years. And then that's how we want to continue. So we teach them biophysics, chemistry, mathematics, English. I was empowered through education in a way where I believed that I could change the world, let alone Afghanistan. And in many ways, I still do think that I can challenge the narratives and think about it and find solutions. So imagine if you have 3,400 leaders, imagine what they will do, like what they will come up with. So my goal is to educate all these girls. Right now, Learn is educating around 400 girls. And we just had our first batch of 30 graduates from grade 12, which, by the way, has not happened in the past 2.5 years in the whole of Afghanistan. So slowly and steadily, we are getting there. Yeah.
So tell us about the classes, about the curriculum, about how you use the web. How are these young girls taught? Who teaches them and what are they taught?
So we have a 75-25% rule that we imply on all our communities. So the first thing I think the international community was wrong with is they went into Afghanistan and they threw money at everything. What we do is we take a step back. So people have to reach out to us. You have to be invested enough in your daughter's education for me to invest in your community. So people reach out to us. They're like, oh, we need a school. And we go and do a needs assessment. When we do a needs assessment, we see if the girls will be protected, if the teachers will be protected. And what we do is we ask them for a space and protection. And then in return, what we do is we give them laptops, we give them salaries for teachers, we pay for maintenance, we pay for electricity, everything and anything that a girl would need to be holistically educated. So that's the first thing that we do with the community for them to create a safe space. Once we do that, we provide with internet, which FYI Learn just launched its first satellite-based internet that cannot be traced and cannot be, I cannot talk about it a lot, but the fact that we have that, it means that we have more sustainability when it comes to internet and it's more faster, more accessible and untraceable. The second thing that we are doing right now is when these girls end up in the school, we have a 100 girls mark for each province. The teachers are introduced by the community. We take their exams. And once we know that they're qualified, we start their training. We train the community, the teachers and the students. And then they have to come every week for 3 days in that space and learn from grade 7 to grade 12, all STEM subjects, all linguistics. And then most importantly, feminist history and world history. And then most importantly, once they are done with all of that, we provide them with health and mental health and awareness program every Friday. So it sort of is like a holistic program. The curriculum is, of course, based on Afghanistan's National Education Strategic Plan of 2020. But yeah, that's what we do in person. But we do have other initiatives. I could go and talk about those. One is the radio initiative, which goes all over 34 provinces of Afghanistan. And it's a one-hour education program that teaches in both national languages, which uses our content that is already on our site. So it reaches almost like, you know, a few hundred thousand learners every day. We have a SIM card partnership where we've provided all our content to these partners. And what happens is any user associated with the SIM card gets a link. Once they click on that link, there's a splash page that gives you access to content from grade 7 to grade 12. And you can just study, you know, and you don't need to worry about internet because it's all offline or accessible to you on that SIM card. So we right now are not only experimenting with the footprint and physical locations, but we're also experimenting on with the mediums and like the modes of education and also the curriculum. So yeah, all these different things.
I have many questions, more questions than time, but two obvious questions. Where do you find the teachers and where do you find the content?
So the content was developed in 2020 when COVID hit. We wanted to make sure that we are, because Learn was the first digital nonprofit in Afghanistan. So what we did was in 2020, we took the lead and we were like, we're going to just digitalize everything we have in the national education curriculum.
So this is Afghan content. This is content that's already been developed for Afghanistan.
Yes. So we have this national education plan. We take all our curriculum from like, you know, grade 1 to grade 12, and we make it in videos. We make it into micro bites. We make it into everything that is accessible on the internet and offline. So we do that. And then in 2021 and 2022, we just continued updating it, and we still do. When it comes to the teachers, it's very simple. First thing that we ask the communities is, you have to introduce girls who could be teaching at these places, because you really want to empower women within those communities to take the lead into teaching and instructing. That develops capacity. And you also don't want to outsource something that you really want to invest in your communities, you know. So, yeah. The four most important thing is safe spaces, but then again, introduction of teachers. Of course, we go through our own process, but the teachers are always introduced from the local communities. Yeah.
There's no shortage of potential teachers.
No, that's not something that there's shortage. Yeah.
Where do you get the resources?
I fundraise day and night.
You laugh, but I'm sure it's not. It's a challenge.
Yeah, it has been a challenge. I mean, we could have had 34 schools this year. We have the satellites. But the sad part is we don't have enough funds right now to pay for all the teachers in all the provinces for each subject. So we're like making sure that we go strategic about it. But at the same time, there are also good people and allies that we have who have helped us with gaining access to the satellites, gaining access to laptops, sending laptops to Afghanistan, by the way, paying for the teachers. So it's a team effort. The board is very active at LEARN, but I also like, you know, I put all my energy into this thing because it's my brainchild. I really wanted to sustain. Yeah.
The Taliban, they must not be particularly happy with all of this, which sounds absolutely wonderful. How do you cope with them?
I don't care about them as much. I really don't. I'm always told, I think a lot of people reach out to me and they're like, oh, you're always out there, but you do all this work. Aren't you scared? And I'm like, at this point, why should I be scared? I have already lost the important part, which is I always wanted to be in my country and lead my country and be part of it and be part of the community building. So potentially I've lost all of those spaces in person, you know. The least I could do is do these. So for me, yes, sure. I think I get a little happy every time I piss off some Talib leader because it just shows how much you're shaking and disrupting their beliefs, you know. And the most important thing is when they come up with this thing, oh, culturally, women are not allowed. Tribally, women don't do that. This is not how it's accessible. And then, you know, you just go on international media and tell them, oh, really? But that's my family from tribal region. They educated me. This is people from here. And this is people from this province who are doing it. So it feels a little good. But yeah, I really don't care about them, how they think or what they think. Yeah.
Let's talk about Afghanistan itself. I keep on reading that Afghanistan's now facing one of the world's worst humanitarian crises, although that's a competition to the bottom that too many are racing. That more than half of the population requires urgent humanitarian assistance. Obviously, ISIS-K, ISIS is active again, tolerated by the Taliban government. You've got at least 8 million people in exile, including you. It's a mess. We already know that Taliban can't govern. They proved it last time. Of course, given the Western suspension of aid, it makes it more difficult. How do you see this? How do you see it unfolding? Not in the long run. I'm going to get there in a second, but in the short run, how does it get better? Or does it just get worse and worse?
I think it's more systematic collapse that you have to look at this time, because sure, the Taliban have not changed, but they have become smarter. Back in the 90s, they didn't speak English, they didn't communicate, they didn't have media strategies, they didn't use Twitter, they didn't have access to those spaces. And they sort of were more in these spaces in the Middle East. Now you look at them, they have women lobbying for them in the US. They have Twitter accounts that they are using as media strategy. I was reading an article yesterday where they have made fake media accounts of women, where these women are saying, oh, the Taliban leaders are very nice. And so, like, you can see how manipulative it gets, you know. You can see that they are actually pressuring international media and international community into accepting their terms or leave the country. So if you're working in Afghanistan as an international NGO, you have to be acceptable of those things, or at least be complicit in it in many ways. So in the short run, I see it collapsing it systematically. They have already collapsed the education system. The healthcare system also collapsed. And now I think I'm looking more towards, like, you know, the economic collapse which is unraveling in many different ways. The currency sustains and then it goes up and down. You don't have any imports and exports as you had in the past. But then also at the same time, you don't have any development going. You're not meeting your population's needs. You don't have a constitution. You go to Ministry of Education's website right now, you cannot find a strategy even for the boys' curriculum, even for the boys' schools. So, and the same goes for healthcare, the same goes for all other ministries. So right now, the country is not even in a limbo. It's like draining and people are like, oh yeah, but it still is nice because there are no bombs going off. But also at the same time, there are bombs that are going off that people don't even care about to hear about, yeah.
Let me end with this question. You are, Prestana Durrani is a work in progress. That's part of the reason why the Telberg Foundation recognized you in 2021 as an emerging leader with amazing accomplishments already, but even more potential. Okay, you just told us, happy birthday, that you recently turned 26, the elderly age of 26.
Thank you, yes.
What do you think you're going to look like in terms of what you're doing or where you are or what you're accomplished when you're 36?
I really hope I have talked, or not even talked, but worked myself out of work when it comes to learn. Like there's no need for learn when I'm 36, or at least it's getting there. Like the country is already well established. We have education system that is flourishing, and that is the goal for learn. I don't want it to become like one of those nonprofits that is there and it's ancient and you're like, oh, it has such a good history. I'm like, we get the work done and we're out. We don't need no more nonprofits for that, you know? And when I'm 36, I'll probably be doing something that is making an impact, hopefully. And I really hope that once I get to that space where I'm working with Afghanistan, I have gotten comfortable with it. I would really want to focus on other conflict zones. And I would really want to lend that support to those spaces and be useful in those spaces and make an impact there. So, yeah, I'm hoping when I'm 36, either there are no conflicts or I have made sure that there is education access in those conflict zones. Yeah.
Do you think you'll be back in Afghanistan by then?
Oh, yeah, definitely. Definitely. Hopefully. Yeah. Yeah. I hope. Yeah. I'm hoping, so personally, I'm hoping I will have my own farm in Afghanistan when I go back. I have this vineyard that is like, you know, almost like 50 acres. And I'm hoping I will be back and I will be like, you know, living on those vineyards and hoping to be part of a useful space, you know? Yeah.
Well, I'm hoping as well. And in fact, I will invite the Telberg Foundation to come visit you on your farm and we'll have a celebration of a successful 10 years.
Yes, yes, hopefully, yes.
Prestana, thank you very much. I hope everyone buys or at least somehow finds steel, however you do it. Last to Eat, Last to Learn. It's a terrific book. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to this episode of New Thinking for a New World. I'm Alan Stoga, podcast host, and I look forward to your joining our next conversation. Remember, tell us what you think at telbergfoundation.org.